Alright, welcome to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, The Mullet, Adam O'Brien, and we're going live today on Facebook as we record the latest episode. Episode number 65, looking at The Crying Freeman, the amazing Christoph Gans, directed Mark Dacascos, anime adaptation, and I was a fan of both, so it's going to be an interesting chat today. So, if you're listening today, it'll be a couple of days later, obviously. Going out on FPN, and right now we're going out live on Facebook, chatting, of course, Crime Freeman.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the B-grade action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax. The lives of American Ninja all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
Welcome to the one, the only Lethal Mullet Podcast live here at Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and of course, we are coming to you live on Phantom Podcast Network's channels, now on YouTube as well, Spotify, of course, Apple Podcasts, and of course, many other podcatchers all around the place. Today, we're going to be celebrating Mark Dacascos' amazing flick, Crying Freeman. It is a bit of a classic from, obviously, the 90s. It is one that's part anime adaptation, an amazing action film, but also, what's great about this one is, it was really his first time leading a big Hollywood Canadian production, I suppose, at the time too. And it's great. Directed by Christoph Gans, who did, of course, The Brotherhood of the Wolf as well. This is a great flick. We're going to get getting into that very, very soon. But before we do, I've got a little bit of a poll we put out recently on the channel, and we put it out also on some of our socials just to see what was the better film. And, of course, we're talking about two Hollywood classics, directed by the same guy and created by the same stunt team, as of course Mega Force and of course Cannonball Run. And we said, look, which one's the better movie? Which one is the most enjoyable? Blah, blah, blah. And basically, it was a pretty much a 50-50. You know, a lot of people love, of course, Mega Force for the cool motorcycles, Barry Boswick, the amazing flying motorcycles, I could say. But guess what? You got flying motorcycles in this bad boy too. That's right, Cannonball Run. Plus, you got James Bond in it, Jackie Chan. You got obviously some amazing Hollywood talent in that one as well. Plus, you got a great Lamborghini in that one too. So, the winner of the poll is, of course, drum roll, Cannonball Run. That's right, and it is also up very, very soon. I think it's episode number 64 we've recorded. Coming out very, very soon. Now, this one, hard to find an amazing copy of out there. I tell you what, you can actually find in JB Hi-Fi in Australia the Blu-ray of number 2 for, I think it's about $25. Really? Come on, JB. Come on, mate. Come on. What are you doing? And, yes, Mr. Brian Snook says apples and oranges. And true, look, it's subjective. We all like what we like. But James Nelson is right. This is a great bloody film. But, of course, more about that on the next episode that you're going to be listening to before this one, which is episode number 64. Also, coming up very soon, we mentioned that we're going to do a lot more when it comes to mullets. And there's one amazing mullet that came on TV screens and gave you a little bit of Fast Cars, some stuff happening around Florida. I'll give you a bit of a clue. We're talking, of course, of Miami Vice very soon. And, yes, I picked it up for the hot price of $9.95. Yes, very, very cheap. All season one, and of course, we get Eddie James almost as the lieutenant in that one. It is great. Coming to you very, very soon. I absolutely love the bloody thing. But, as mentioned, we do have some great stuff coming up in the news segment, so we'll get into that very, very soon here too on the show. But, here's where you can catch this show and more on FPN.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, man, how you going? Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Phantom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com or
subscribe on the Podbean app, where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
So make sure you check out FPN, of course, Fandom Podcast Network, fpnet.podbean.com. Also check out Lethal Mullet on at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, folks. Go and check it out. Now, let's get into the news segment here on the show tonight. All right. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. So the news is stuff we haven't been able to talk about on the podcast, obviously, previously. And there's, of course, something to do with Back to the Future. Yes, the starring role, of course, Michael J. Fox and, of course, Christopher Lloyd had, in the second film, an amazing thing called the Almanac, which you can see around. And surprisingly, Lee Fillingsness, Lee Units even put a post up about this before, a nice little meme that came up. So hats off to you. But, of course, this is the one and only Almanac or sports statistics up to the year 2000. Pretty late now for us, isn't it, folks? Don't really need it now. Maybe till 2045. Can we get that? But, of course, it's everything that you would need. And you can find this relatively cheaply now on Amazon. And why wouldn't you want this amazing slice, of course, of Back to the Future history? Along with that, you can also get the amazing A Match Made in Space, George McFly's novel. Yes, it's true. It's there. Can you believe that? It's amazing. But yeah, believe it or not, it's got nothing in it. It's true. Other news coming up in the next episode. I have, of course, Kyle Wagner, co-founder of this here show. Also, we have Lee Fillingsness himself too. And we're going to be chatting about this bad boy, Only the Strong, Mark Dacascos. This is the first volume of our look at Mark Dacascos, this bad boy right here. And, of course, his opponent in this one is, of course, from Wrong Bet, better known as Lionheart, which is the better title of a Van Damme film. Wrong Bet, of course, folks. Come on. Aussies always have the better titles. It's true. It's a true story. Just ask James Nelson. But in this one, one of the great things is he's actually the pool fighter. Let me see, doing a bit of capoeira in that one as well. This is great. It's the only Hollywood film which has capoeira as a main arc of it, and that's going to be, of course, our one with those guys very soon on the show. But coming up, we also have a review of something I told you about in the last episode, and that is, of course, about Shokasugi, the amazing ninja, martial artist, actor, and, of course, now writer of The Yin Yang Code. This is a great little series that's illustrated as well as being a novel itself as well. It is a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of martial arts, but, of course, the big thing is it really follows the ways of Bushido, the way of the warrior. This is cool. I'm going to be giving it a really good read over the next couple of weeks, and we're having a show all about Kasugi, looking at Pray for Death, of course, Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and, of course, the amazing 9 deaths of the ninja, along with, of course, Black Eagle. It's all going to be on this here show, folks, as well, too. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of an update on other stuff that we found around the place, because, of course, physical media is now gone. Because streaming, obviously, is the way of the future for a lot of people. Me, I like a bit of physical media, all right? I like to see things as they are. So we've been picking up some classics, and some of those will be reviewed on the next couple of episodes. One of those is, of course, H.P. Lovecraft film. And I'm going to tell you what, if you like H.P. Lovecraft, which I know a certain person watching right now is a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft, that is, of course, you need to check out this bad boy. And that is, of course, Color Out of Space, starring the crazy, the always entertaining Nicolas Cage. And it's directed by Richard Stanley. Now, if you don't know Richard Stanley, you need to think about your genre loves, because I tell you what, he's done some amazing work in the past. And you know what? I'm going to make you go and check it out. You can Google it. All right? You know, easy. Get on there, do that, check it out. It is an amazing film, and it is in the sort of, I suppose, that sort of era of The Thing in terms of horror, a little bit of Stephen King to it in some ways too, worth checking out. That's one to check out. Another one is, of course, an interesting 2010 film called Bunraku. Bunraku is kind of a form of puppetry using pop art and pop-up sort of, I suppose, it's landscapes and stuff like that. And the amazing thing is they did a film about it a couple of years ago starring, of course, Josh Hartnett, Woody Harrelson, Gutto from Japan, Kevin McKidd, Ron Perlman, and, of course, Demi Moore. This is an interesting film. The action is not involving firearms and stuff like that. It's more melee-based. You got everything from swords, axes, knives, you name it. It is an amazing samurai sort of style to it and worth checking out. Spend some money on that one, folks. You'll love it. The other one is, of course, one I got to see at one of the recent, in the last couple of years, conventions out here. Now, this is a convention which also has cinema releases and stuff like that too. And, of course, it had Yakuza Apocalypse. Now, this is a little bit hard to find. It's not as easily found out there. It is, of course, a Takashi Miike film. Takashi Miike, of course, director of some amazing films. One of those being 13 Assassins. If you haven't seen that, I suggest you go and check it out. Another one that's a bit more gruesome, but again, samurai packed, as well as, of course, Harakiri, which means, of course, ritual suicide. And you do need to check out that one. But this one's even better. This one is more of a comedy. It's got some of the action stars from, of course, the Raiden as well. It also has a martial arts frog man. Yes, it's like Frogger come to life with kung fu ability. It's like Chuck Norris is inside the outfit too. So worth checking out. This I got to see on the big screen. I don't think anyone else here in Australia got to do that. So go and check it out, folks. It is amazing. We've also got some Van Damme films that have come out recently too out here on Chibi that I found. We're going to go through some of those. Assassination Games, Six Bullets. I do believe we've got Scott Adkins in one of those. Woohoo! Scotty! That's right. Scotty, of course, big fan of, and we're going to be going through some of his films as well very, very soon. And, of course, we've got Hobo with a Shotgun. Still don't know what that movie's all about yet, but we'll find out. I'm guessing it's probably about a hobo with a shotgun. Also, we have on here, too, the 10 amazing kung fu and martial arts film cinema releases on there. We've got Blazing Temple, Bodyguard with Sonny Chiba, The Dragon Connection, but the best one, of course, is Blood Fight. Now, Blood Fight, we've mentioned on this show before, Blood Fight is all about, of course, the amazing work of course, a master from a film that you know very well that starred, of course, the amazing Jet Li, that we're calling, of course, Fist of Legend. And this is a film that is basically, in some ways, a ripoff of Bloodsport. It was actually made before Bloodsport. And what about that film is great is that we have a real feel of the Kumite still there, training, but of course, an amazing martial artist, which is going to come to light in that episode very soon. Of course, it stars Bolo Jung as well, and he's pretty much playing the same type of antagonist, very much a Chong Li-style character, just like Bloodsport in this one. Bloodfight, though, gotta love some of the amazing work that is done in that too. The fight scenes are second to none. They're amazing too. On here as well is an amazing martial arts film, one from the 70s that actually pretty much took all the John Williams music from Star Wars and just put it in as a soundtrack, and then they must have released it in Hong Kong and China, unbeknownst to the Star Wars creator, and of course John Williams too. But the music is in it. It's there. And finally, one that we're going to be looking at in a couple of weeks' time is a fun Van Damme one that should have had a sequel. Of all sequels, he should have done that, not those Universal Soldier sequels, even though the one with Adkins was pretty damn good because he stole the show. And there's, of course, Double Impact. Now, you do remember Double Impact, I know, because it starred Van Damme and, of course, Van Damme, not exactly the best poster art for this one here, too. They had the better one with the Desert Eagle and, you know, Shad and Alex, basically, in those scenes. This is a great film because not only did it star those, it had the police commissioner from Bloodsport in it too, who was actually, believe it or not, a real police commissioner before he went into the movie business as well. And obviously too, we have Chad and Alex in this. One's more the classic Van Damme, you know, a bit more of a prancer. And of course, the second one, of course, is Alex, who's the hardcore, you know, scoundrel. He's got all the cigars, everything you knew later on that became like things, Chance Boudreau, and of course, Hard Targets, all there, folks. So we're going to be doing that on that as well, too. And that's all on this show in the next couple of months. Shokasugi, Brotherhood of the Wolf coming up, obviously, as well. That is, of course, Lee filling us on that one. In French, that is, of course, Le Parc des Loups. That's right. Now, Le Parc des Loups is one of the amazing films that Christophe Gans put together with Marc Dacascos playing Money, the native Canadian tracker that comes to France to basically find the Beast of Gévaudan. And the Beast of Gévaudan is actually the myth that created, or not, it's actually the true story that created the werewolf myth that we all know so well and we see thousands of Hollywood movies about. What's interesting about that one is Christophe Gans put that together and I think it was 2002 that came out, 2003 here in digital cinemas only in Brisbane, which I got to see at the time. Saw it about three times and still lost my lunch over the the horrific scenes at the start of the film where we basically don't see the creature, but we see the victims, which are women and children. It left men alone for some reason. It's part of the myth. It's really weird, and you see why that is towards the end of it too. Again, we won't go in too much on that because I want to give you guys a bit of a history lesson when we get to that too. And Lee, of course, has been to France and knows all about that sort of stuff too, so we're going to get right into that. But let's get into it. We're going to join the Lethal Bar now as we talk about, of course, the one, the only, the Crying Freeman. Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies and more here on the Lethal Bullet Podcast. I think a faithful adaptation of the anime. Now, the anime I did have, and I've had it since basically the mid-90s, and of course I had a VHS. The first, I think it was three or four volumes I had at the time. Beautifully drawn animation in this one too. And of course, it goes through the story of the killer. And the killer is, of course, this Japanese potter who basically gets drafted into a secret society. In this society, he becomes the Crying Freeman, their assassin, to take out Yakuza operatives. It's a Chinese society of assassins and basic crime, where they put hits on specific targets, and he's basically their secret assassin. You never really see who he is or what he is, but he comes from obviously being picked up as a potter and trained to be this assassin. That's pretty much the run of what it is. But in this story, he is, as we see his connection to the past come back to him, it's him confronted by an amazing reporter, which of course Julie Condra plays in this version. And she comes through and basically awakens his past, even though it's been brainwashed from him and all that sort of stuff by the Chinese triad. And that's the brunt of it as he goes through each episode. Now, it goes right back, of course, to the manga as well before the anime. So this is two generations from the original source material too, but it is an amazing one to check out. Now, this was made in British Columbia, Vancouver, obviously, in Canada, and directed by Christophe Gans, who I think is one of the best directors out there, particularly visually. He's got a very breathtaking look to how he puts out his films. This, of course, was, I suppose, coming from his first couple of films, really starting to find his voice. And there's an ethereal sort of sense of the cinematography that he does in those as well. So starring this, we've got, of course, Mark and Julie, who we've talked about. Ray Dawn Chong from Commando is in this one as well. She's quite good as one of the police hot on the tail, of course, of the killings. Byron Mann. Now, Byron Mann's been in just about everything. Street Fighter, obviously, he's been in. The Corruptor, which is quite good in as well. Great actor who could just pretty much walk into any role and just make it his own. He's fantastic. We also have Masaya Kato. We also have Yoko Shimada. Mako has a small part in this too, in the court scenes, what we see in this too. Of course, very famous actor, unfortunately passed now, but one of the greats. And first big thing I saw him in, of course, was playing the wizard in, of course, Conan the Barbarian. Of course, he was in The Destroyer as well. And of course, Checky Cario, you can't go past, just amazing. So a lot of what this story is, of course, is setting up a lot of those events. And pretty much the film does follow a lot of what we see in the anime. So we get to see a lot of the adaptation follow that through It's a little bit, in some ways, darker. This is a very noir sort of thriller to it too. The film itself keeps with that element, and I think in some ways it gets to the nature of what, of course, Mark is going through in his role. He's quite good in this too. Of course, he plays Yo Hinamura. That's the character's name. He's a skilled assassin, but he sheds tears for every target that he takes out. So, and through shedding those tears, we see that obviously he's vulnerable to what's going on, but his muscle reaction, martial ability is pretty much programmed into him by, of course, the bad guys. Byron Mann plays his partner, or the Freeman's partner in this, and he's there to make sure that nothing goes wrong and that Yo is always on target, no matter what. So if he doesn't do it, Yo will be killed, of course, by Ko. And he plays it so well. It's kind of like he sees the plight of what Mark's going through. And Byron's always played good sympathetic characters to a certain extent to what their plight is in the film. And this one in particular, he's just a brother. He really is. You know, he's trying to egg him on to do this stuff, obviously. But at the same time, he's trying to get them where they need to go as well. And of course, we have Masayo Kato playing, of course, Ryuji Hanada, who's basically in this, he's kind of like, I suppose, the head of the division, or so we think in the story too. I don't want to give too much away here. And of course, he's Shimazaki's right-hand man in this too. So he's basically, by about halfway through the film, he's the head of the Shimazaki clan. And of course, the big rival for, of course, the Chinese triad. Yoko Shimada plays Kimi Hanada, Ryuji's wife. And spoiler alert, folks, the true leader of the Shimazaki clan. Obviously, she is amazing in this. Yoko Shimada is somebody who, at the start of this, we're not sure exactly, you know, what she's going to do in this. Because obviously she has an extramarital affair in this with Cheka Cario, where she's just playing it on it, you know, really, in some ways, moving it around so that we get to see, in this case, that she's got the power over not just her own people, but also the police as well. And there's a lot of that play through what we do too. Obviously, she was also in The Hunted, which is a great film. If you haven't seen The Hunted, this is an amazing ninja film that was done in, it was 1995, 96, something like that. Christophe Lambert plays a guy that's basically witnesses a murder. And in that, he's sees the murder happen, and the ninja now go after him because he's a witness and he's actually one they couldn't take out. It's an amazing ninja film, and she plays in it a role of the wife in this, of one of the leaders of the Kenjutsu school that she's part of. And basically they're there to protect Christophe Lambert's character. The great thing about it is it has one of the best sword fights, ninja fights, what do you want to call it, martial arts, weapons battles, on the bullet train, right? You know, the old Shinkansen, you know, it is an amazing, at speed, you know, a fight. And it's obviously, you know, all these ninjas coming out of everywhere, and they're all in plain white gis, and they're coming to attack the Kenjutsu master. And there's a scene too where the police saying, after the massacre, you know, and they're coming out, you can't walk around with a katana anymore, you know, you cannot take a Nihon To around like this. And he just literally grabs the blade, puts it into the concrete just outside the bullet train, and just smashes the blade, which not sure that's going to happen with even with as much force as your hand is going to have. But again, great film, and who knows, we might cover that here on the show as well. But again, amazing actress, and she's really the heart and soul of this film, because we get to see her not just be the leader of the clan, but at the end there's a real heart and soul to how she feels about Yo Hinamura as well too. So, and it's an interesting one too. Now, this was a co-production in 94 between Canada and France, and you can obviously see that there's Christophe Gans coming in, and is this amazing artistic director who really has an eye for visuals, but also how to get action on screen. The action in this is really well portrayed. It is pulled back, so we don't have that sort of Christopher Nolan style of going straight in, and right, the action's here. And all you see is fists flying, kicks, all that sort of stuff. None of that's happening on screen. What you are seeing is it pulled back enough to see Mark's amazing one-hop kendo style. And it really is well portrayed in this too. Obviously, there's quite a little bit of other martial arts involved, blades, weapons. We get to see a little bit of firearms play in this too. Not the John Woo style in this, which was popular at the time, but at least enough of, you know, you get to see assault weapons, small ones as well. We get to see, obviously, Ryuji using the machine pistol that we've seen in the anime adaptation as well. So it's pretty loyal actual adaptation of the thing itself too. Now, Julie plays Emu Ohara, who's basically witnesses the murder, and she's committed by the Freeman to be killed as well. And that's how they meet, obviously. He's trying to kill her in that too. And but funnily enough, obviously they fall in love, but behind the scenes, two actors actually fell in love too. And that is, of course, Julie Condra and, of course, Mark Dacascos, which, of course, became a couple and, of course, now have a lovely young family as well too. So hats off to Mark too for not only being a great actor and stuff like that, but being a great father and stuff like that as well. We see he posts on social media and stuff like that. He's out there keeping the family fit and healthy, and obviously too inspiring us as not only you know, just people in lockdown in a lot of countries right now too, with obviously the COVID crisis that's happening, but also just being out there and being able to do, there's something, a release of martial arts, there really is. And I think in particularly his style, there's something liberating about getting out there and just really pushing your body to its potential. You know, it's a vehicle, and you got to tune that vehicle or service that vehicle, make sure it's right and running, even at middle age and older. And I'll tell you what, if you keep that machine in order, well, obviously you can do what he's doing out there too. Obviously, too, we have Ray Dawn Chong playing Detective Forge in this as well. And, of course, she's partnered with Nita, which, is, of course, is the one, the only amazing actor. You know, we've got to say, Checky Cario. Cario, you know, he's got a real ability to not only make interesting characters, likable characters, creepy characters. He's got the full gamut, but he's also somebody that really takes over the scenes and stuff like that. Particularly, I think his best role is in Wing Commander, a film that's pretty weak in performances outside of his role. But I think what he does in that is makes this interesting, mystical yet grounded look at, obviously, and elements in that series which draw you in. You know, the Wing Commander obviously is different from Star Wars. It's different from Star Trek and other things, and it's more about piloting stuff. But what's great about it, it really sort of draws you in that part of it too. So you've got to give his due to that as well. He's brilliant. Now, the other actor that you're going to see from Stargate in this, and of course, Mark Dacascos was also in Stargate, folks, so there you go, is, of course, Paul McGillion. And, of course, you'd know him for being in the Stargate Atlantis series. Fantastic actor. And also he's in JJ's Star Trek as well. In that one alone, you know, he's just sort of got that little speech where he's got the little dat pad and goes, right, no, you're meant to be on this one, you know, ship or whatever it is, before they get out. and, of course, just a great actor, always entertaining in the roles that he does too. So that's pretty much the cast. And, you know, at the end of the day, it being such a small cast, I think it sort of brought together what we need in the film.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
Now, action scenes, all that sort of stuff in this film. What's a standout? The big standout for Crying Freeman, I think, are some of the scenes, obviously, just outside when Mako's character gets assassinated. And this was Shido Shimazaki, the leader of the Hakushin Society in this. He basically is the target. And in that, we get to see, obviously, not only Yo get inside that role and we see the mask and all that sort of stuff and the gunning through, but we also see Byron Mann with a sniper rifle and stuff like that. So it's something a little bit different for a martial arts fair in that sort of film. We've also got some great scenes later on where we see the backstory of Yo Hinamura being plucked out, obviously, as a potter who becomes an assassin. And when he does, it's interesting because we get to see his first kills, also when he's getting tattooed, and we get to see this crazy, mystical woman, you know, coming through and starting to whisper the deeds of killing to him, you know, that he has to, you have to kill. And it's really ethereal, mysterious, dark and sinister, but it draws him in. No matter what he does, he has to do it. And of course, it's kind of like the maturing candidate a little bit. You know, he's brought on to do that sort of thing too for him. But it's getting to see those various kills. And in some ways, it's a little bit like Boondock Saints. You know, it's sort of a flashback through. And the other part we see is when he goes to Japan. And at the end with, of course, with Emu. And when he takes Emu to Japan, we get this amazing scene out near a monument and, of course, some bushland behind it and stuff like that in his area there too. And it has some boats involved, but it's the martial artistry in those scenes that really sells it. It's, for me, an amazing scene, and we really get to see Mark's abilities. Martial arts, a little bit of acrobatics, but charisma. He's a guy that can really draw in an audience, and, you know, you sort of see his plight. There's something about him that... you know, it's not like your Chucks or your Scott Adkins or Van Damme. You want to see this guy succeed. You want to see him do well. And I think that's part of what it is too. Now, the film itself, there's quite a favorable rating on this one. You know, it was an enjoyable film. It was one that was, again, an anime that a lot of people enjoyed, me included, obviously, too. What I loved about it personally was the fact that it was about somebody that was, you know, plucked away from what they were doing, and it was their fight to get back to what they had. You know, it's our fight in society to get out of situations. And it's sort of, you could kind of put yourself in those circle, you know, and see where you can go from there. And I thought that was really interesting sort of take on it too. To see that too, Mark was the right casting for that too, and I think that's what made it so good. Of course, one of the interesting things about this, you know, there's a time where, of course, we had Chow Yun-fat doing a lot of amazing action roles from Hong Kong there with, of course, John Woo, really pushing the firearms play and stuff like that. So this was kind of like a halfway meeting point of those two, because obviously it's a little bit different and you have a martial arts star that's able to do what he does as well too on top of it. It's an amazing job. And of course, we've got to get to it, the Hallenbeck scale for this film. So where does it sit on the Hallenbeck scale? Of course, if you don't know what the Hallenbeck scale is, it comes from The Last Boy Scout. Of course, Hallenbeck is all on your fingers. So 5, it's out of 5. And this film gets a 3.5 out of 5. I think the film maybe just needed to be a little bit longer to see a little bit more, not only of the rivalry between the two worlds that they had there, of course, the Shimazaki and the Chinese Triad, but we wanted to see also a little bit more of Ryuji's fight with, of course, Yo Hinamura. And you do in another Mark Dacascos film, that is, of course, called Drive. And it is an amazing film. It's a bit of an action comedy. And, of course, Ryuji, Masayo Kato, is in that one as well, which we'll probably cover here in a little while too. You can find that one on the Tubi channel, I believe, and maybe even on Prime as well, streaming. So there you go. There's some amazing benefits of the streaming services as well too. So go and check it out, folks. Anyway, as we wrap up today, The Crying Freeman is definitely one you need to see. It is one before you hit The Brotherhood of the Wolf, which we're going to be covering in another episode very soon, that really states the abilities of Mark Dacascos, who's come from obviously amazing martial arts background. His parents are very, very talented martial artists as well. And of course, tell you what, he's got many other shows, films out there to check out when it comes to those two. All before John Wick 3. All right, folks, I want to thank you for joining us here on this live broadcast. We've got more of these coming your way, obviously, too. You can find us now on YouTube. Just look up Phantom Podcast Network and you'll see Kevin's face and, of course, Kyle's, mine, and, of course, you'll see Dan Hadley. You know, Dan, good old Dan, he goes, "Hey, mate, doing? You're right." That's right, all the way from London, where he's got the amazing Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, and many other. And, of course, he runs Spacebook on Facebook, so go and check it out too. For now, this is the Lethal Mullet saluting you all, and saluting you the Australian way too. And we'll catch you next time here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network and all of the other awesome shows we have to offer. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture news podcast. Blood Kings, our Highlander podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback Podcast, discussing a year in movies and our favorite pop culture topics. End Zone, the NFL Podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast, Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast, Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast, Lethal Mullet, a 1980s and 90s action film podcast, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, and our newest show, Making Treks, a new Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier with host Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.